Chapter 117. We receive calls at the Hotel de Calabuza, our place of confinement being open all round, and so near the Broom Road. Of course we were in plain sight of everybody passing, and, therefore, we had no lack of visitors among such an idle, inquisitive set as the Tahitians. For a few days, they were coming and going continually, while, thus ignobly fast by the foot, we were fain to give passive audience. During this period, we were the lions of the neighborhood, and, no doubt, strangers from the distant villages were taken to see the Carhuri's white men, in the same way that countrymen, in a city, are gallanted to the zoological gardens. All this gave us a fine opportunity of making observations. I was painfully struck by the considerable number of sickly or deformed persons, undoubtedly made so by a virulent complaint, which, under native treatment, almost invariably affects, in the end, the muscles and bones of the body. In particular, there is a distortion of the back, most unsightly to behold, originating in a horrible form of the malady. Although this, and other bodily afflictions, were unknown before the discovery of the islands by the whites, there are several cases found of the papa, or elephantiasis, a native disease, which seems to have prevailed among them from the earliest antiquity. Affecting the legs and feet alone, it swells them, in some instances, to the girth of a man's body, covering the skin with scales. It might be supposed that one, thus afflicted, would be incapable of walking, but, to all appearance, they seem to be nearly as active as anybody, apparently suffering no pain, and bearing the calamity with a degree of cheerfulness truly marvelous. The fafa is very gradual in its approaches, and years elapse before the limb is fully swollen. Its origin is ascribed by the natives to various causes, but the general impression seems to be that it arises, in most cases, from the eating of unripe breadfruit and Indian turnip. So far as I could find out, it is not hereditary. In no stage do they attempt a cure, the complaint being held incurable. Speaking of the fafa reminds me of a poor fellow, a sailor, whom I afterward saw at Ruatu, a lone island, some 2 days' sail from Tahiti. The island is very small, and its inhabitants nearly extinct. We sent a boat off to see whether any yams were to be had, as, formerly, the yams of Ruatu were as famous among the islands round about as Sicily oranges in the Mediterranean. Going ashore, to my surprise, I was accosted, near a little shanty of a church, by a white man, who limped forth from a wretched hut. His hair and beard were unshorn, his face deadly pale and haggard, and one limb swelled with the fafa to an incredible bigness. This was the first instance of a foreigner suffering from it that I had ever seen or heard of, and the spectacle shocked me accordingly. He had been there for years. From the first symptoms, he could not believe his complaint to be what it really was, and trusted it would soon disappear. But when it became plain that his only chance for recovery was a speedy change of climate, no ship would receive him as a sailor. To think of being taken as a passenger was idle. This speaks little for the humanity of sea captains, but the truth is that those in the Pacific have little enough of the virtue, and, nowadays, when so many charitable appeals are made to them, they have become callous. I pitied the poor fellow from the bottom of my heart, but nothing could I do, as our captain was inexorable. "Why," said he, "here we are started on a 6 months cruise I can't put back, and he is better off on the island than at sea. So on Ruatu he must die." And probably he did. I afterwards heard of this melancholy object from 2 seamen. His attempts to leave were still unavailing, and his hard fate was fast closing in. Notwithstanding the physical degeneracy of the Tahitians as a people, among the chiefs, individuals of personable figures are still frequently met with, and, occasionally, majestic-looking men, and diminutive women as lovely as the nymphs who, nearly a century ago, swam round the ships of Wallace. In these instances, Tahitian beauty is quite as seducing as it proved to the crew of the Bounty, the young girls being just such creatures as a poet would picture in the tropics, soft, plump, and dreamy-eyed. The natural complexion of both sexes is quite light, but the males appear much darker from their exposure to the sun. A dark complexion, however, in a man, is highly esteemed, as indicating strength of both body and soul. Hence there is a saying, of great antiquity among them, if dark the cheek of the mother, the son will sound the war conch, if stronger frame, he will give laws. With this idea of manliness, no wonder the Tahitians regarded all pale, untepid-looking Europeans as weak and feminine. Whereas, a sailor, with a cheek like the breast of a roast turkey, is held a lad of brawn. To use their own phrase, a adatona, or man of bones. Speaking of bones recalls an ugly custom of theirs, now obsolete, that of making fish hooks and gimlets out of those of their enemies. This beats the Scandinavians turning people's skulls into cups and saucers. But to return to the Calabooza Baratini. Immense was the interest we excited among the throngs that called there. They would stand talking about us by the hour, growing most unnecessarily excited too, and dancing up and down with all the vivacity of their race. They invariably sided with us, flying out against the consul, and denouncing him as tomato inui, or very bad exceedingly. They must have borne him some grudge or other. Nor were the women, sweet souls, at all backward in visiting. Indeed, they manifested even more interest than the men, gazing at us with eyes full of a thousand meanings, and conversing with marvelous rapidity. But, alas, inquisitive though they were, and, doubtless, taking some passing compassion on us, there was little real feeling in them after all, and still less sentimental sympathy. Many of them laughed outright at us, noting only what was ridiculous in our plight. I think it was the second day of our confinement that a wild, beautiful girl burst into the Calabooza, and, throwing herself into an arch attitude, stood afar off, and gazed at us. She was a heartless one. Tickled to death with Black Dan's nursing his chafed ankle, and indulging in certain moral reflections on the consul and Captain Guy. After laughing her fill at him, she condescended to notice the rest, glancing from one to another in the most methodical and provoking manner imaginable. Whenever anything struck her comically, you saw it like a flash, her finger leveled instantaneously, and, flinging herself back, she gave loose to strange, hollow little notes of laughter that sounded like the bass of a music box, playing a lively air with the lid down. Now, I knew not that there was anything in my own appearance calculated to disarm ridicule, and indeed, to have looked at all heroic, under the circumstances, would have been rather difficult. Still, I could not but feel exceedingly annoyed at the prospect of being screamed at, in turn, by this mischievous young witch, even though she were but an islander. And, to tell a secret, her beauty had something to do with this sort of feeling. And, pinioned as I was to a log, and clad most unbecomingly, I began to grow sentimental. Ere her glance fell upon me, I had, unconsciously, thrown myself into the most graceful attitude I could assume, leaned my head upon my hand, and summoned up as abstracted an expression as possible. Though my face was averted, I soon felt it flush, and knew that the glance was on me. Deeper and deeper grew the flush, and not a sound of laughter. Delicious thought, she was moved at the sight of me. I could stand it no longer, but started up. Lo! There she was, her great hazel eyes rounding and rounding in her head, like two stars, her whole frame in a merry quiver, and an expression about the mouth, that was sudden, and violent death to anything like sentiment. The next moment she spun round, and, bursting from peal to peal of laughter, went racing out of the Calabooza, and, in mercy to me, never returned. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.